All right. It's another week. More Match Room Radio with David Diamante. That is me. I am your host, and we're back in London this week for a huge night of boxing, and it's headlined by Conor Benn's WBA Continental Welterweight title defense. He's fighting Sammy Vargas this Saturday at the Copper Box. I can't wait for that fight. I think it's going to be a great fight. And on the undercard, of course, we have two world title bouts, one of which has caused a bit of a stir across social media. So we've got Courtney versus Bridges for the WBA vacant world bantamweight crown. It's up for grabs. And over the next half hour, we're going to go ahead and be joined by both fighters. So it is my pleasure to welcome the blonde bomber, 5-0, two knockouts, Ebony Bridges, fighting for the vacant title on Saturday night. Ebony, nice to see you. How are you?
Yeah, good. Nice to finally meet you and see everyone's faces and, you know, be here. It's awesome. I'm feeling great.
Absolutely. Someone told me this is your first time in London.
This is my first time in the UK, in Europe, over this side of the world. I've only really been like Americas and, you know, obviously Australian around there. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, as we can tell from your accent, you are a proud Aussie.
Yeah.
Is it true you live like 5-10 minutes from Nigel Benn?
5 minutes. So like, yeah, 5, maybe 7 minutes from Nigel. Yeah. He lives literally around the corner. You know, I was training with him in the local gym. Every day he was there, and yeah, and I know India very well. You know, me and India go for coffee all the time. It's Connor's twin. But yeah.
Nice. And was he kind of a big inspiration for you?
Oh, you know, definitely. Well, you know, growing up in boxing, like, you know, Nigel, like Ricky Hatton, as if we're going to talk about obviously British boxers, Nigel and Ricky Hatton are both definitely my, especially Ricky Hatton, because his style is very like appetizing to me. It's similar, you know, we're short and like, just go for it.
Absolutely. And we just a couple of weeks ago saw his son Campbell make his pro debut.
I know. Amazing. You know, I'm really looking forward to watching Campbell. You know, obviously the whole family, they're amazing. The Hattons, and to get Ricky back in the scene a bit more and to see him and just that banter, you know, like I love the banter, and Campbell seems to be very like him. So it's going to be very exciting with him.
Absolutely. Now you were born in New South Wales. Is that correct? What was your upbringing like?
Oh, my upbringing is good. Like, I got to, my parents are amazing. My dad's an artist, so, and my mum's creative as well. So both my parents really pushed, you know, growing up to just being an individual and doing your own thing. And they were pretty, like, lax with me with whatever I wanted to do, supporting anything that I wanted to do that were really good. I have a twin brother and an older brother. Actually, my twin brother has a dreadies that are pretty close to as long as yours.
That's what's up.
And an older brother who's like 2 years older than me. So I grew up with boys. And I, you know, growing up, I was like always doing all the boys stuff and just wanted to do everything my brothers were doing. And
bit of a tomboy.
Definitely a tomboy. Like, definitely a tomboy. I mean, in my primary school and like early high school, everyone, you know, like back then, like everyone was like, oh, you know, like she must be like gay, like, because I was a big tomboy, huge tomboy. So
they always made assumptions.
Exactly, making assumptions on appearances and looks, and it's just, yeah.
So is growing up with boys, is that how you got into mechanics? Tell me about that. What kind of mechanic were you?
I was a light vehicle mechanic.
Okay.
So like, you know, I mean, I looked into diesel mechanics, but I was so little, and actually diesel mechanic pays a lot more money. But no, I did light vehicle mechanics. Maybe growing up around guys, I think, you know, I was just into cars, and I suppose because my brothers were into cars and just having that love for cars, I was like, I want to be a mechanic. And that turned pretty fast, because when I was a mechanic, I was like, God, I hate cars. No, but like working on them is obviously very different to appreciating them. But I did enjoy being a mechanic, and I love being around the boys and all of that. But yeah, I mean, I did the trade and was like, okay, I'm done now. On to the next.
You love those American muscle cars?
I do. I'm a big, my favorite cars are like, not American, but even Australian cars like Toranas and Monaros and like Cortinas or Corvettes, like all the old school though. Like, I love my like 70s and 80s.
The 69.
The Mustangs, honestly. So they're all my kind of cars. I was like, always growing up, I want to get a car with like a supercharger and, you know, all this stuff on my car. And like, I had like all these crazy ideas with cars, but I actually lost my license like 6 times before I turned 22, because I used to have these cars and I used to put diesel squirts. I don't know if you know what diesel squirters is.
Sure.
Okay, so I just love doing burnouts. So I welded my diff so both wheels would spin.
Differential, right?
And I welded it so both wheels would spin at the same time when I dumped the clutch, and it would be like mad heli, like sideways burnouts. And you actually would, I wired up my windscreen squirters to my rear wheels, and I put diesel in the windscreen wiper container and squirt diesel on my tires before I did burnouts because it smokes.
So they'd really spin.
So they smoke because the smoke is like crazy, yeah. And I lost my license for doing burnouts. lost my license for going sideways, like everything. So then as I got a little bit older, I realized that, you know what, Ebony, you just need to get a car. You don't do silly things in and grow up a little bit. Or,
so what are you driving now?
Oh, God, it's embarrassing. I just drive like a normal Ford front-wheel drive. I've gone away from rear-wheel drives because I just can't help it with a rear-wheel drive. But, yeah, front-wheel drive Ford Focus, which is, yeah.
That's a far way away from the
– I thrash it, but I just, yeah.
from the Mustang Fastback or the 64 Impala.
Oh, my God, right.
The Stingray.
Yeah.
That's all right, though. So, and then you got into bodybuilding. And you were into bodybuilding for a number of years. It was like 7 years or something?
Yeah, about 8 years.
Okay.
Yeah, so
okay.
Pretty much my 20s. Yeah.
Okay.
My 20s, yeah.
And did you participate in competitions or was it just a hobby? Or?
No, I did competition. I did international competitions, Australian nationals. I won I won regional, national, and state. When I did international competitions, I came third and fifth in them, and it was figure. So I don't know if people are listening to no bodybuilding. Obviously, figure is in between kind of that bikini and the real, like, bodybuilding. So in figure, you have that really, like, ripped, hard, muscly body, but you wear heels, and you still flex like a bodybuilder, but the hands are open. So it's just more feminine, got the stages, I suppose, if that's what you want to call it. And back then when I was doing bodybuilding, it was very rare for even just a young girl, because I wasn't in my, like, 20, to be doing bodybuilding. Most of the women were, like, older. So, yeah.
Did you find that – I mean, obviously being a bodybuilder, you've got to be really fit.
Yeah.
But that's obvious. But to be a boxer also, but it's very different.
Different fitness.
It's
so,
very different. Did you find it hard to make that transition?
Yeah. So, I mean, I wasn't fit. I hadn't ran for, like – 8 years. I smoked a pack of cigarettes a day when I was bodybuilding.
Wow.
Like, I wasn't fit, like, lung fit.
Sure.
But I looked fit. Obviously, I was strong. I was super strong, you know.
You didn't
I
have the conditioning.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't fitness. It was strength and look. Bodybuilding is an aesthetic sport. It's an aesthetic sport. It's not really an athletic sport, you know, so it's very different. So the transition was huge, you know, and going from having to static lifting and very nothing with fitness, nothing where I really had to lose my lungs because it's like, you know, 10 reps or something on to going to now all of a sudden I have to bounce around, jump around, go for runs, and it was crazy. I had so many injuries when I first tried to transition over, and also just the mental side of letting go of bodybuilding and the aesthetic obsession, because that's what it is, and me trying to box and do weights at the same time was really, really hard. So I had to get rid of, I had to just go, no, you're not a bodybuilder, Ebony. Like, stop lifting weights because it's actually slowing you down in boxing. And I wasn't really getting really much with my boxing because I was doing two things.
Sure.
And once I got rid of the weights, my boxing went through the roof, you know, because then I could focus purely on boxing like I did with my bodybuilding and give it everything. And I haven't really lifted weights since bodybuilding except for, like, some throwing things around, a little bit of strength and conditioning.
Let's talk about another muscle that you've worked on very hard, and that's your mind.
Yeah.
So you've got 2 degrees and a master's, I understand.
Yeah.
What are your degrees in? What's your master's in?
Yep. So I got a degree in exercise science, or PDHP, and mathematics. And then my master's is in education mathematics. So mathematics and education.
And that's what you teach?
And that's what I teach.
And you teach in high school, yes?
I teach in high school, yeah.
What is it like a certain, in America we have like it's 9th through 12th. What grade do you specifically teach? Or you teach them all?
Yeah, from the age of 12 to 18. Because we just got one, like you guys got middle school and then high school. So that's it. For us, it's mixed, middle and high together. So I teach all of those.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure your students probably listen to you.
Oh, they do. No, it's, but it's, yeah, but it's not because of like they're scared. It's because of like the classroom rules, the classroom vibe and environment that I have. It's a very positive environment and it's a very uplifting environment where they need to believe in themselves. And I have one particular classroom rule which says, you know, banned words. I'm dumb, I can't, and it's too hard.
I love
it. It's banned. They're not allowed to say it. And if they say it, they have to come back at lunch and they got to write lines. I can do it. I'm amazing. And they have to write affirmations about themselves. And they hate it. They think it's so lame. But I make them do it. You know what I mean? And then they'll dob each other in. Miss, he just said that he can't do it or that he's dumb. And I go, oh, see you at lunchtime. You know? And then I also have at the bottom of my classroom rules, believe in yourself because I believe in you. Because it's very important to instill these kind of things in people's minds from a young age to You just got to believe in yourself, man. And you just got to try. And with mathematics, people give up so fast. You know, kids give up so fast. They think just because they haven't done it once, they can't get it. Or you try it, you fail, that's it, you're dumb. You know what I mean? And I can't stand that because it's giving up so early. So I try with maths, putting in that same mindset that I have with life and about not giving up, you know, and they feel like success straight away.
Yeah, for sure. So you find it really fulfilling.
I love it. I love teaching. It's very hard for me to be, like, even here being away from my students because I just know that all the work that I put in with them in their mind and with what we do in the classroom, and they just love me so much that a lot of the times they just don't want to work with another teacher. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I don't want them to go backwards because we're putting so much effort to programming their minds to be like that, to, you know, to really push themselves and believe in themselves and try. And I work with, like, lower grades, like, as in a lower level.
Okay.
You know, ability, you know, because I think at the lower ability, that's when they've really given up. And if you can just show them, hey, like, you're not dumb. Just because you're here doesn't mean you can't aim to be in the next level next year or next term. You know, all you need to do is work harder and, hey, that should be your goal. Not being stuck down here.
And you find you can make breakthroughs with those students.
Oh, definitely. It's amazing. And, like, every day, like, it's amazing. I really, like, you can probably tell by looking at me, like, I just, how much I love teaching and seeing that in my students, yeah.
There was a time in my life, actually, where probably people don't know about this.
Yeah.
There's no reason that they would, but I wanted to give back and I took a course to learn how to teach kids.
Yep.
And I was doing volunteer work at a local elementary school. And so I'd come in once a week and they'd put me with the troubled kids.
Yeah.
And I'd be with a group of like four or five kids that were like the bad kids.
Yep.
And it turns out that these kids were just so amazing and they were incredibly smart, but they didn't have anything at home. And so when they would get to school, they just wanted to act out because they wanted attention and they'd miss the lesson. And the next lesson was built on that lesson. So they were completely lost. Yep. So that's why they were lost. It's not that they weren't smart.
No.
So I'd sit down and I'd go through the lessons and they were like, oh yeah. And they'd got it immediately.
Exactly.
And it was this great breakthrough. And it was just so,
you would be fulfilling.
It was so rewarding. Yep. Oh, it was amazing for me.
100%. So you get it, right? And I started when I first left university, started teaching. I taught in a school which was known as a disadvantaged school, and it was an Aboriginal Indigenous school. So these kids, that's exactly the background. That it's all very low socioeconomic kids with bad, like, homes.
Yeah,
you know, and they don't even want to go on holidays because they'd rather be at school. Some of these kids, you know what I mean? Like, and they have no positive around them. They have no real life success around them. So they can't see it. So when I would go to school and I would travel an hour and a half, and I live in a very wealthy area, and I would travel an hour and a half to this school to teach these kids because I wanted to show them. Because I came from like a lower socioeconomic, you know, like I didn't come from the best, like, wealthy background, you know. And I wanted to show these kids, you know, that, like, you can do it, you know. And they're
what
like,
what did your folks do?
My dad's an artist and my mum works in insurance. But with art, like, it's with anything that's creative, it's very intermittent. You know what I mean? So sometimes we have lots of money and sometimes we had no money for a long time.
Feast or famine.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a perfect way to put it. So it's just about that. And I'd go and do seminars. I run a boxing program at the school, both schools that I've taught at. I run a boxing program. The first school was on Fridays. The girls would come before school, like early. They'd come like an hour and a half before school to do boxing with me. And it was just for like the troubled girls. And then in the school that I'm at now, it's the actual school's giving me a period, like three periods, to work with these anxiety or low confidence girls. And then the next term might be I work with the, like, they call themselves the anger management kids, like the girls, and I work with the girls, just trying to show them about positive self-talk and positive relationships as well, because in school, especially girls, they're always fighting. And it's just like when they come into that room with me to do boxing, there's no hate, there's no war. I don't care what happened at recess. I don't care what you got going on in here. You respect each other and you uplift each other and you have to support each other. If you see, you know, your teammate like lagging, you bring them up and you're not allowed to quit. I'm sorry, you're against quitting. You know, so when they know if they come in there, like, they got to work.
I'm curious, how long have you done this?
teaching
four years. 4 years. Because what I think will happen, which is going to be amazing, is you're going to see these kids get out of school and go on to great things and have these amazing lives. And they're going to come back and say, thank you for what you've done. It'll be really, really rewarding.
Yeah, it is. Like, I could talk about my teaching forever. Like, I mean, even just the stuff that I see in the kids, like, it's just the little things, man. It's just caring. Like, and there's a lot of teachers that do their job monotonously. They just come and they do their job. You know, but I'm so passionate about wanting to help people and wanting to see people succeed and wanting to inspire people. And it starts with our youth.
It really does.
You know, and I think that's really important. And I'll do it. You know, I'll work in my recess and my lunch training these kids and helping these kids, anything, you know.
So is teaching a full-time job for you?
Yeah, except for this year.
Okay.
I decided to, obviously, I've gone like it's casual. So where I would just go in whenever I want, with my school, because I'm so good with the school, I'm pretty much there like every day on a casual basis. But if I don't go in, then I don't get paid. So last year I was working 4 days, which was on a contract. So I was locked into my classes. But because I knew that I was probably going to be fighting for a world title and I was going to be chasing my boxing dreams this year, I said to them, look, let's just go on a day-to-day basis, which they've put me in for 5 days anyways, or 4 days a week I'm there. And then if it happens to come up like this opportunity, then I can say, hey guys, look, I gotta go, you know, but I'm not locked into any classes.
Yeah. So speaking of your boxing, let's talk about that just for a second. So you made your pro debut in February of 2019.
Yeah.
You got a majority decision win over Pereno.
Yeah.
But you broke your ankle.
Yeah, I snapped my, yes.
Well, during the fight. I mean, yeah, you must have felt it straight away, obviously.
Yeah, I snapped my ankle. I snapped the syndesmosis and I... Actually, you know what? I got a flash knockdown. So I was up and down before I even knew that I was knocked down. I was arguing with the ref, like, what are you counting me for? I didn't even know because I wasn't dazed. It was just really flash. No effects. The fact that I didn't even know I was on the ground, you know. And then I was like, why is he counting me? What the fuck? Like, you know, I was so angry. And then I was like, oh, and then I went to walk and I'm like, oh, my ankle. And I was like, oh, I must have just twisted my ankle. I was so confused. I was just like, okay, she's dead. So then I just like went on a mission to just destroy her for like, you know, the next end of the round. And then when the bell went, like I could feel my ankle wasn't really right, like when I was pushing off it. And then when the bell went, it was like the adrenaline went and I was like, went to my corner. I said, I think I broke my ankle. And he's like, well, what do you want to do? I'm going, what a basher. Like, I mean, I got to get it back. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not quitting, you know, like, and it was on national television. It was pay-per-view. It was on a Tim Zoo undercard. So it was, you know, all these things. And these people, I'm not quitting. And so I'm sitting there and he's like, put your legs out. My leg was out and my ankle's throbbing. And then the bell went, it was like, switch on, you know. And I had my trainer, he's taught me from day one, you can't show weakness. You can't show weakness. So I had to go in there and just pretend like I was sweet. And the only way for me to do that was just keep punching. If you see that fight, I don't know how, I mean, as much as I feel in a record, like, I just kept punching because as soon as I was thinking about, like, if I stopped punching, I'd hurt my ankle because I'm walking on my ankle and I'm thinking about my ankle. So I'm like, just keep smashing her. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I just had no power through my back leg or nothing.
Cause I'll tell you, that's an early gut check to show how much heart you have.
Yeah, and then after my fight, next day I went to hospital, had surgery, and then I was out. I was on crutches for... 3 months. I couldn't put any weight on my ankle. Had to have a shower and a chair. Had to learn how to walk again. Had another surgery, and then I was out for 8 months. But I won. That's all that mattered, and I didn't quit.
You did win, and I also know that you had to deal with the AC joint separation in your shoulder.
Yes.
You had the ligament issue.
Yeah.
Did you do PT on that? Did you have surgery?
No. I didn't need to have surgery.
Physical therapy.
Physical therapy.
Yeah.
But because I did it in America and then I had to go into quarantine when I got home. It was 3 weeks where I did no real physio. But I did actually get on call with my physio because I got a really good physio team, Spinal and Sports Care, and they gave me exercises to do and mobility work to do. But, yeah, that took about just over eight weeks to get through.
Do you think that it will affect your power in any way?
Not at all.
No.
Not anymore. No.
And are there any other injuries that you've been having to deal with, or that's pretty much it?
How long have you got? This is boxing. I mean, no, honestly, I've got another thing. Like, you always see me like taped up. I feel like I'm a Humpty Dumpty. I've got pretty bad elbows, whereas you know, for pretty much most of my career, I've torn ligaments there. I've got pretty bad arthritis in my elbows, so that flares up and down. But yeah, I mean, nothing at the moment that's going to be any kind of reason for me to, you know, not be well in this fight.
No hindrance.
No excuses. None.
I love that. You know, I was talking with Bones Adams yesterday, the trainer Bones Adams.
Oh, yeah, Bones.
Yeah, he's in the bubble because he's working with Sammy Vargas. He said you can crack. Mm-hmm. He said, yo, Evity can crack.
Yeah.
You got that power.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I knock out girls in sparring with, you know, 16-ounce gloves on and headgear. Literally. I mean, yeah, talk to Kaylee.
To Kaylee?
Yeah, she didn't get knocked out. But, I mean, like, she knows because she's done some rounds with me. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And I think that's just the what I've been trying to get over. You know, I've had a very broken pro career. I've been pro for 2 years. The first year I was out for 8 months with a broken ankle, snapped ankle. The second year I was out for COVID. So, unfortunately, I mean, I haven't really had a really nice steady where I can continually fight and really you know, learn those things that you go, because every time I'm fighting, it feels like it's been so long. I got to start trying to scratch again. But I feel like for me, the main thing is I got the power, but I need to learn how to sit and I need to learn how to patient. You know, be patient and pick the shots or set the shots up right, because there's no point having power if you can't use it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Absolutely. Well, you've been training with Arnel Baratillo in Australia, but I know that you recently moved to Philadelphia. So you're with Split T.
Yeah.
Big shout out to Dave McWater, by the way. And also Brian Cohen.
Yeah.
So, and Brian is here with his fiance, Kaylee K.O. Reese.
Yes.
Who is, she's amazing. And so is Brian. You know, Kaylee is the two division champion, WBA super lightweight and WBC middleweight champion. You've been sparring with her.
Yeah.
So I assume you've been getting some good sparring.
Really, really good sparring. You know, it's been amazing working with her and just her experience as well. And just both of them, it's been great. Like, you know, it's my third camp in Philadelphia, but it's my first camp with Kaylee as a coach kind of thing. Because last camp, Kaylee was training for her world title that I was there for. So we're both training for world titles. But obviously our weight difference is so different that she couldn't, working with me wasn't going to help her. But now it's like having both of them, it's just, it's been amazing. And the stuff that I've learned in and how I've improved in the last 3 weeks, obviously I had that fight to get all that rust out as well. I just had an 8-round fight 3 weeks ago, 3.5 weeks ago. And then having these guys, you know, coming to Philadelphia and having both, you know, experienced Kaylee and Brian working with me, it's been an absolute godsend. And I'm just so excited that I have Kaylee here and Brian in my corner. It's I got, and you know, with my coach flew over as well in the beginning of the week, so it's like I got a dream team. I'm so confident.
You got the dream team. Do you like living in the States or staying over there? I know you're not living there, but you're training over there.
I love it for camp because I have zero distractions. At home, my training, I travel like up to 5 hours a day. I'm driving around just for training, you know, and I've got, you know, I feel, you know, obviously obliged to work, and then I got to see these people, and I got to drive there, and I got to do that, and I got to look after my boyfriend, I got to cook his food, and I got to clean up, and I got to do the clothes, and I got to do my stuff and cook my food, and then I got to, like, it's so much when I'm at home.
It's a lot.
It's so much, you know what I mean? Being in America, it's such a different thing. I literally train, eat, sleep, rest, train, eat, you know, plan, have a banter on social media. And that's it, you know.
Matt. You do like a banter on social media.
Like a good bit of a shit stir, yeah.
There has been a little bit of a banter on social media.
Yeah, but so it is amazing. Definitely for my camps.
Yeah. Speaking of social media, real quick, because I know that, you know, obviously you're fighting Shannon Courtney.
Yeah.
Do you rate her as a fighter?
Yeah, I mean, she's all right. She's she has, like all of us, she has a lot to a lot to learn as well. I think she does some things good and she does some things really bad.
You think Rachel Ball has exposed her, maybe shown you the blueprint to victory?
I knew it from her first few fights. I could see it straight away. But yeah, I mean, not really. I mean, Rachel just shows what I already knew.
Yeah. Speaking of Rachel, real quick, do you think you were supposed to fight her?
Yeah,
and that fight fell through. Do you think that ship has passed, or would you be in a scrapping it up
I
with her?
I feel like I need to fight Rachel because she. So this is like, obviously, you know, me and Rachel are friends as well, but obviously me and Rachel are supposed to fight first. But she beat Shannon, so if I beat Shannon, it's not like it's great, but it's not great because she beat Shannon too.
So you need to beat her.
So I need to beat her.
Got
to
beat the man that beat the man.
Exactly.
You got to beat the woman that beat the woman.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. That's exactly how I feel about that. And I would be, you know, and I think she deserves Of course she deserves
so
it.
So if you come through Saturday, Rachel can be looking in her...
Definitely. Yeah,
looking out for you.
Oh, definitely.
So yeah, back to the social media thing. Do you feel like you've gotten under Shannon's skin?
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure I got under her skin ages ago, but now, probably more.
I see you guys just saw each other out in the in the lobby.
I was like, hey, Shani.
And what'd she say?
She said, see, I don't know what she said. I don't even know what she said. I wasn't really listening. She said something like, oh, I said to her, see Saturday. And then she was like, I see you before then. And I go, oh, yeah, true, in your knickers. But, yeah, I don't know what she said. But, yeah, she's grumpy. She looks pretty grumpy, so.
I can't wait for this fight. It's
she must be starving, I reckon. She's dragging her feet along. I hope she picks her feet up better in the ring.
I think it's going to be a great fight. So I was talking to Brian and Kaylee, and it seems like you've been not only training in Philly, but you've also got some work up in New York City. You were fighting up in New Rock City?
Yeah, I was.
Up at Ryan O'Leary's gym?
Yeah, I did. I sparred Natalie Gonzalez and a few other girls from there.
I heard you did like 19 rounds with four different girls.
Yeah, I did 19 rounds straight. Yeah, and I was sharp as the whole time. I felt really good. I just do whatever I've been told. I didn't really ask. I think at one point, I don't even know where I was. Maybe at the 10th round, I'm like, how many more rounds do you reckon we're going to do? And he goes, as many as we can get. And I go, I just want to know so then we go even harder because I like to finish strong. And he goes, just as many as we can get. I go, all right, you know what? That's it. And I just keep going, and whatever. And then when it was done, I'm like, how many rounds was that? And they were like, that was 19 rounds. And in my head, I was like, why didn't we do 20? because I'm like numbers. It's like 19, but I did. And I felt really good. And because before then, and now with girls my size, before then, all I spar, even in Australia, is girls a lot bigger than me and guys bigger than me. Everyone is so much bigger than me. So it was nice to spar. Girls my size.
Yeah, well, supposedly one of them was like a decorated amateur and the rest of them were pros.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one was like two or three times Golden Gloves champ, yeah. And I thought I did pretty well, to be honest. I think they were all really impressed. The coach there was like, wow. He actually said to me, I've seen you on the social media and, now seeing you in person and actually seeing you fight, he goes, it really impressive. Like, you impressed me so much. Like, it's just so different, And I was like, That's how it is. So I hope to do the same thing on Saturday.
Do you think the training in Philly and in New York changed your mindset at all?
Yeah, I think
the Americans train, the way they fight.
Yeah, definitely. I think
you learned some stuff from that.
I learned so much. It's just different. It's also just a different.
Connection with who? The trainer.
Like Brian and Kaylee, like working with them, it's just different. And the stuff that they look at and having two coaches, having Brian or Kaylee holding the pads and the other person watching, just being really all about me. Mm. At home, it's a bit hard. My coach, he trains a gym with like a lot of amateurs and a lot of people. It does get hard. And feeling like in camp with, two people that are solely about you and just the way Americans are. I know, us Australians, how we fight. We're always known as like brute, come forward. Aggressive fighters, a bit like Mexicans. But the Americans add that little bit more finesse and a bit
nuance.
More, and I like that. And I'm a very fast learner. So I think it really suited me as well. And they suit me as well. We just click with people.
Yeah, that's what I understand. You are a very quick learner.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
Yeah, they said to me, it's like playing a PlayStation. We just tell you what to do and you do it.
Well, it's like you're saying with your coach, sometimes in Australia, you've got so many things going on. It's almost like you with the kids teaching.
Exactly.
Sometimes it's that one-on-one makes all the difference.
Yeah, and sometimes, I've been with my coach for a long, since I started boxing 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago. So sometimes just new things. Some coaches, I feel like you can learn from anyone and everyone. You can learn something from, and it might just be one thing. There might be just one fucking thing that I've learned from one person that could take me to here or could make me win that fight. I'd be like, that was because of that one thing that I learned from that person. And your coach could be coaching forever, but it was that one thing. Shit, that clicked to me then. And that's what got me the fight. Or you just never know. So, I just think it's always good. Obviously you don't want to have too much conflict. I don't want to go somewhere they're trying to change my style. They didn't try and change my style at all. They worked with the style that I had. And if anything, they made it even better.
Can't wait to see it Saturday night. Let's talk a little bit just away from the ring. You were talking about your father's an artist, but you're also an artist. Can we talk about your art for a second?
If you compare my art to my dad's art, I'm not really an artist. My dad is impressive. My dad's Gregory Bridges, or Greg Bridges. You have to check out his art. He actually won, he came to the States in Texas, and he won the best color and futuristic artist in the world, like back, you know, it's actually a long time ago now. It was like, you know, back in like 2000 or 99. So, you know, he's that was a long time ago, and he's impressive. But yeah, my art, I just do portraits mainly. I'm, you know, my dad constantly tells me, because I always say I'm not creative, and he goes, "You are creative." And I'm like, "It's not creative, but because I'm just copying a picture." And he goes, "Trust me, that's still creative because you're still doing it your way, and it's still very creative." Because I see my dad. My dad's like a futuristic surrealist. So everything that he paints, it's like he's on drugs or smoking weed or like something. You know what I mean? Just because, it's so wild. You're like, where does he come up with this shit? Like you know, his mind is just incredible. So when I'm just copying a portrait or a picture, I don't feel like I'm creative. But yeah, I mean, and pretty much I draw boxes. That's my thing. I'm doing a little bit of a Harley Quinn theme now. So that's my thing. That's my creative. Don't Harley Quinn, but that's just again using female bodies and just adding the Harley Quinn touch to it. But yeah, I've drawn a heap of boxes, and most of the boxes are people that inspire me or the people that I like.
Speaking of art, you wear a lot of tattoos.
Yeah,
you have a massive leg piece.
Yeah.
What is the art that you have?
So actually my cousin is my tattoo artist. So he's another artist, but yeah, I have all Oriental. So, it's all like, Oriental Japanese, on my leg. I've got, dragon. I've got a big phoenix. I got the dragon just purely for the art, because dragons can be very artistic. With the phoenix, it was a little bit more personal, cause you know, phoenix is rising from the ashes. And I thought that really suited kind of me. And, yeah, and then I got like butterflies and flowers to keep it really feminine. And then I've got on my arm, I've got Tibetan on my arm, which is like it's called the Mani Mantra, and it's a prayer for love, compassion, humility. Cause as I live by that, humility is a really big, value for me, being very humble. And then my other arm, I've got Siga Seus Sonhos, which says follow your dreams in Portuguese. I speak Portuguese. And, the Brazilian flag on my arm as a, inner butterfly. Because Brazil is very close to me. It's like my second home.
Do you have Brazilian blood?
No, I don't. But I dated a Brazilian, and it became my whole community became Brazilian for a very long time. So
I spent a lot of time in Brazil.
Yeah?
It's a country I absolutely love.
It's the best. I've been there like 8 times.
It's phenomenal.
Brazil. Yeah.
It's phenomenal. And you were talking about how some of the tattoos are very feminine, you know, the butterflies and stuff. There's been a lot made about, you know, your way in attire, shall we say, and the way you dress and your overall profile.
Yeah.
What, you know, love it or hate it, people talk about it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's the point, right? But you know what, to be honest, the way I dress, I feel like I dress quite like conservative or classy. Like I'm a school teacher, so I'm very specific of what I put up on my social media, especially my Instagram. So if it's not sport related, I'm not revealing. If it's not sport related, my chest isn't like, it's not, I'm not showing things, you know what I mean? Or I'm covering it up on purpose if I put a story or purposely cover my chest, because I do have students that follow me, you know what I mean? So if I'm not doing recovery where I have to be in a bikini because I'm in a sauna or in a cryogenic chamber, or if I'm not on the scales, I'm clothed, and I'm very respectively clothed. So, I mean, people can talk about it as much as they want, but maybe it's just my hard-earned bodybuilding figure. It looks good. And I've got implants, you know. So, you know, people are just like, oh, wow, like boobs, like on an athlete. Maybe that's what it is. I just feel like because I feel like I don't really go too much out of my way. It's just I think it's this it's just the blonde bomber. You know, it's the tattoos, it's the blonde hair, it's the chest, it's, you know, my personality probably, and I think it's just stands out, and people just want to pick at it. You know what I mean? So I don't care. Anyway, it's getting views.
It is getting views.
And people are gonna tune in, they're gonna see a pretty little savage in there, and hopefully wanna watch more women's boxing, because hey, it's also aesthetic.
That it is. It is entertainment also at the end of the day. And yesterday, I think Shannon did a tweet saying something about lingerie, and then you tweeted back with pictures of her.
Yeah, what the hell? Exactly. And it's the thing that bothers me a little bit, like where I was like, you know, I don't personally like to like really attack people and do those kind of things. But I thought, do I have to point out, like, are you that blind that you're not realizing how much of a hypocrite you are? Not only that, she's the one that called me naked. after my weigh-ins because I'm wearing lingerie. And her last fight, she wore it in lacy G-string. So she joined the naked club now, like, it's like, you know, because like now we're all naked. Like, apparently, like, if that's what you want to say, that I'm naked, I'm not taking the sport seriously. So does that mean she's not taking the sport seriously now because she wore lace underwear in her last, like, I don't know. Like, she's just, it's just, you're talking shit, girl. Like, I mean, it's just, I just, I'm so real, you know what I mean? And I just feel like if you're going to say something, you can't be a hypocrite. Like, you can't, like, just don't say it. You know, and so when I did those tweets and I just thought, you know what, I'm going to show you exactly, you're giving me shit for something that you do worse than me, you know what I mean? And not only that, it was like, you know, you do realize when you started at Matchroom in your first year, you got so much slander for being the pretty girl and being the, you know, just in it because of your looks and only like you because, and now you're attacking me for it. Like, You train just to, apparently, unless she doesn't train hard, and maybe that's why, because she thinks, well, I'm pretty, I don't have to train hard. I don't know, and so she thinks I don't, but maybe she doesn't take it seriously.
I think that we have Shannon in the other room, and supposedly I think she can hear us.
Really?
I see the concerned look on my producer's face. He might have to get the security in here.
He's not concerned, Dave. No, I'm thinking of the views of this podcast go up. Yeah.
Well, I guess he's speaking of views. I guess he's salivating at it. All right, let's go ahead and let's do a segment we call Rapid Fire. We'll wrap with this. Okay, it's been great talking to you, but
thank you.
So I'm gonna shoot off some rapid fire. So I'm gonna say some things and quickly see if you can do like a one word answer. Okay,
good luck. Have you seen how much I talk?
Far out. Okay, your favorite TV show that you're binging right now?
I don't watch TV shows often, so I'd have to say Cobra Kai was probably my last one.
I liked Cobra Kai. I really liked Cobra Kai.
Yeah. Strike first, strike hard, no mercy. That's my motto. I wear the shirt. I love Cobra Kai.
I loved it because, you know, when I was coming up, you know, Karate Kid was such a big deal.
100% me too.
When Cobra Kai came out, I saw, I was like, I'll give it a shot. Oh, it was great.
Do you know what I love? I love how they turned Johnny Lawrence. He's changed the roles.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but definitely I'd say Cobra Kai. And I you know, I always say the strike first, strike hard, no mercy, because that's how I am. Like,
there you go. Okay, pound for pound, the number one in women's boxing, pound for pound. Who do you think?
Clarissa Shields.
The dream venue that you would like to fight in?
Oh my god! I can't do these quick things because I'm so indecisive. Wembley.
Okay. And then you walk into a bar, what's your drink of choice?
Oh, I should have said Ellen Road. What was I thinking? I know. I need to find an Ellen Road, but yeah, drinking?
Yeah, you walk into a bar, what's your drink of choice?
Apple cider.
Okay. And last one here, women's boxing, 2-minute rounds or 3-minute rounds? And you can elaborate on this if you want.
Okay, thank you. I think 3-minute rounds is definitely going to get more knockouts because – my last fight was very obvious of that. My opponent kept getting saved by the bell. But I just don't think that we should be doing 3-minute rounds until we start getting paid more. I don't expect to be getting paid exactly as much as the men because I do still believe it is commercial value, but we're still getting paid very low. So I don't see what – I don't want to be fighting threes for more work, for more risk, for less money. Like, that's the only thing I have against it. But I do think the knockouts will come. Hey, so it's kind of like what comes first, the egg or the chicken? Because the knockouts might bring more views. But
and there you have it. Ebony, it's been great talking to you. It's been great having you on the podcast. And we cannot wait for your fight on Saturday night with Shannon Courtney. And we wish you the best of luck. And we'll let you go now.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Talk soon. All right, so check it out, everybody. We're here with Shannon Courtney, the baby-faced assassin, 6-1, 3 knockouts from Watford. She's fighting Saturday night for the vacant WBA Bantamweight World Championship. And we spoke earlier with Ebony Bridges. That is her opponent. So, Shannon, it's great to see you. It's great to have you here in the bubble. It's great to have you on the podcast. How you doing?
Oh, I'm really good. Thank you for having me. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good. It was good to see you last. I saw you last night. We poked our heads out of our hotel rooms. Hey, what's up? Hey, yeah,
not allowed to leave, but we could poke our head out.
Exactly. Yeah, it was good. It was good. It's always good to see you. It's good to see you in the bubble. And man, you've been getting like poked and prodded today, huh? With like all the media and.
Been a bit of a full-on day.
I'm saying
every time I think I've got half an hour to myself, can you do this photo shoot, can you do this filming, can you do that? But I think any boxer wants to get themselves into a position to come to fight for a world title, and I'm here, so this is the expected, you know. So I think I'm just trying to enjoy the entire experience because I know there's going to be more of this to come when I win the world title.
Well, that's absolutely true. If that does happen on Saturday night, there'll be a lot more.
When?
And it's like, I think that for the young fighters out there listening that think it's just about boxing, there's a lot more to the business than just fighting, right?
Oh, this isn't just a sport. This is a business. There's so much to it. Even when I entered the professional ranks, I was quite naive to how much there was to go with it. It's very full on. It's not just go to the gym and go home. There's a lot that comes with it.
No, there's a lot to it. And especially fight week, there's a whole lot to it. You have to really be mentally focused, you know?
Yeah, mentally strong and mentally focused to be able to do this career. Definitely when you're on the biggest platform like we are.
We are on the biggest platform. So let's talk about your camp just for a bit. I know that you said, what was it, 16-week camp?
Because obviously I was supposed to fight...
Rachel Ball, right?
Yeah, in February. And then... No, originally it was January, then it got postponed because of COVID, and then it got postponed to end of February, and then unfortunately Rachel Ball got COVID, so sending her well wishes, and then it got postponed obviously to Ebony to now. So I've been actually training for this fight for 16 weeks.
Is there a fear of overtraining?
No, because I'm sharp as a razor, so I know that's never going to happen because it's done me good because I'm genuinely the fittest I've ever been. And it's allowed us to, the privilege of training on things that we might not have been able to because of time.
So no stone unturned.
Yeah, everything that we needed to work on and develop, we've been able to. So it's been a beautiful camp of just... consistent learning, consistent adapting, and different scenarios. Great sparring partners. It's been a really good camp, and I've actually enjoyed it. It's been long, it's been hard, but it'll all be worth it. The only thing that's not been great is the staying in the travel lodge. That's not been great for 16 weeks. But I've gone home a couple of nights. Don't get me wrong, but that's not fun.
Yeah, it can be tough being away from the family and loved ones. I want to echo your sentiments to Rachel Ball and hope that she gets well soon. How does that change of opponent alter your preparation for a fight?
Well, of course it altered it because I'm going to state the obvious. There's a big height difference, you know. So we've had to change opponent. But the funny thing is, it's not funny. Sorry, it took me to Rob saying this. Our sparring partner that we'd originally had was a lad called Rob, and he dislocated his knee. And he was 5'10". He's a bantamweight, fantastic boxer who was good for Rachel's sparring. And he dislocated his knee, and I was like, oh no, that's my sparring partner out the window. And then the fight got changed, and I was like, oh, it's okay. So then we rung in different sparring partners. So we've had...
to try to mirror Ebony.
Aggressive, come forward. I've been sparring a man that's a lot heavier than me, so that I can stand there and have him lean on me because she likes to stand up close. So with every element that she brings, we've covered.
She stands in your way of a world title. She's been very vocal in the build-up. Do you think that's just all attempted mind games?
I think it's probably attempted, and not even that. This is her first actual time being at a fight of this magnitude, you know, being... Let's be honest, Matchroom's the biggest platform, so... She's talked her way into this fight, and now she's here. She's continuing the talk, you know. This is her first time experience of something, a build-up of this big, you know, being on TV like we are and doing even the little things like this. So she's probably lapping it all up.
Well, that's funny that you say that you think she's talked herself into this fight. Do you think that she truly belongs here, or do you think she really did just talk her way into this opportunity?
You have to give respect to any fighter. Just climbing in between them ropes is a very hard thing. Do I think
facts?
Facts. This is the hardest job in the world. You have to give respect to any fighter. Do I think if she hadn't have been as vocal as she had been on social media, I'd be fighting her this weekend? Truthfully, no. But she did what she needed to do. So give props to her, and she's got herself here now. So she's done it her way to get into a world title fight. So yeah.
I know that you really want to make this about the fight, but I know, just being honest, it has been about more. There's been a lot of back and forth. There's been a lot of different stuff. I mean, what do you make of her as a person? I mean, have you watched her interviews? It seems that maybe you're not so pleased with her outside the ring. You know, maybe with the way she dresses or the way she acts during certain things. And even because we just had her on and someone said that you were in the other room and could hear some of her interviews and weren't happy about it. I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not.
I never said that. Okay. I'll be honest with you. This is gospel. I haven't watched any interviews. The only things that I know that she has said is things that I've been tagged in. And then like I've obviously, because I've been tagged, I've seen the headline. You know, and they're obviously clickbait titles, so I'm not reading into it too much. The only thing that I don't have a problem with her because I don't know her. How can I have an opinion on someone that I don't actually know? Yes, today in the foyer is the first time I've actually laid eyes on her genuinely as a person. So how can I have an opinion? I don't like that rather than talking about the fact this is a world title fight and this is a huge fight, a huge opportunity, and a big deal for women's boxing, she'd rather talk about what we're going to wear at the weigh-in. That's what I don't like. I'm a fighting fan as well as a fighter, so I want to have some respect for boxing and talk about this great fight. Our styles are going to gel and it's going to make such a great fight for the fans. That's what I want to discuss. I don't want to discuss Victoria's Secret. Nah.
Do you think your styles will gel?
Yeah. We're both aggressive, come forward fighters. I think it's going to be a very exciting fight for the fans.
I think it's a can't miss. I can't wait for this fight, just to be honest with you. I just can't wait. I mean, it's really going to be a cracker. Yeah, I love it. We have the press conference tomorrow. How do you expect that to go down?
I'm expecting her, as usual, to have a lot to say and for me to be cool, calm and collected. I'll let her burn her energy. I'll let her use up all of her energy doing the talking, and I'm just going to stay calm and collected like I have been all week.
But at the same time, you're a fighter. I mean, I know who Shannon Courtney is, a fighter.
I'm Irish. I'm fiery, okay? I know you're fiery. I'm a feisty girl.
Sometimes it's hard, you know?
Of course it is. But when you know there's a world title at the end of it.
Eyes on the prize.
Only eyes on the prize. I'm too focused to let anything deter me right now. I'm literally, by any means necessary, I'm going to win that world title. Nothing is going to shake me from that.
You're a huge favorite with the bookmakers, like really big.
Oh, I don't really know about betting.
Do you think that brings any more pressure to you? Do you feel any more pressure because of that?
This is the first I've heard of it, so no, I don't really understand much about gambling, to be honest. I can't really entertain this.
Basically, they're saying you're the favorite to win.
It's nice to know. It's nice to know there's belief in me. It is what it is. Doesn't give me any confidence. What gives me confidence is the hard work that I've put in. What gives me confidence is hearing my coach say to me, this is the best you've ever looked.
Charlie Beat, by the way, he's right here in
Shout
the corner.
Shout out Charlie Beat.
Shout out Charlie Beat. And H is going to be in your corner too.
He's stuck in his room. He's not been let out yet.
Yeah.
That's what gives me confidence. Having them two in my corner. And not just in the corner on fight night. Every day for 16 weeks telling me, yes, you're doing this, or you're hitting these numbers. We're not happy with that. Run that again. Hit that number on the treadmill, Shannon. You can throw that left hook a bit quicker, a bit better. Let's do it again. That's what gives me confidence. Making sure that the devil's in the details, and they're being crucial with me this camp. If things aren't right, we do it again. Sparring wasn't great. Spar better tomorrow. That's what gives me confidence.
Train hard, fight easy.
100%.
We just got to know a little bit more about Ebony's backstory. Yours is very well documented. Mm-hmm. You posted a picture on your social media the other day from a few years ago when you ended up in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what happened and what was a turning point in your life?
So that was 7 years ago. My kidney stopped working. I was not really living a very healthy lifestyle. And I wound up in hospital because of it. And
Was it? Partying, was it?
Yeah, partying.
Drinking, okay.
Smoking. I think I ate takeaway every day, I think, to be honest. Not sleeping because I was out partying nonstop. Just up to no good. Not being a good person, basically. Went up in hospital, had an emergency operation, and then the doctor said to me and my mum, you know, if she doesn't sort her life out and clean her lifestyle up, she's going to wind up here again or worse. It was bad. I couldn't walk for quite a while because my left leg didn't work after it for a while. And then I found God and I found boxing, and my entire life changed, and I've never looked back since.
You found a purpose.
That's what I always say to people. It wasn't just finding a sport or did I found my purpose. And I used to wake up not knowing why I was put on this earth, and that's why I was going out partying, because I had no responsibilities. I didn't know what I was doing with my life, and then I found boxing, and it's almost like God said to me, this is your purpose, this is what you're meant to do. And it was destiny, because now I'm sitting here about to fight for world title.
You feel like you're living your purpose.
God is great.
And you're living your truth.
He's given me destiny. Yeah, this is why I was born. 100%.
What would Shannon Courtney now say to the Shannon Courtney of that age? Like passing on any type of wisdom, what would you say to a younger you?
Sort your life out.
And do you think a younger you would have been receptive?
No. Me, 7 years ago, I thought I knew everything. I was an arrogant, narrow-minded idiot. I knew nothing about the world. I had such bad views on things. And I'm ashamed of the person that I once was. So what a beautiful thing that I've managed to transform my life. And I can now, without being arrogant, sit here and say I'm actually proud of the person I am. And I have a little sister who's 14 years old, Harriet, that I know she can look up to me now.
Mm.
7 years ago, she couldn't have looked up to me. I was a bad example. Now, I know I can do justice by my mum and by my family, and hopefully have other young girls look up to me and think, do you know what, if I do right and I, you know, work hard and I'm determined and I stick at something, I can too become somebody.
Speaking of dreams and goals, if you win this Saturday, you've hit a massive bucket list ambition, you know, becoming a world champion. Supposing you do win on Saturday night, what else would you like to achieve?
Saturday night isn't my Everest. There's more to come for me. But all I care about is Saturday night, obviously. But I don't want to just win a world title. You know, world champions, when you stay world champion, when you defend that belt, and then you go and collect more belts and you unify. My ambitions and my dreams don't stop Saturday night. It's just the start for me.
Well, you know, once you reach that level of world champion, there's no going back. There's no easier fights. The bolts tighten.
That's it. It's only going to get harder.
It only gets harder.
I'd like to, a big thing I would like to do is I'd like to fight in the States. I think that's what I want to do next.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think once you've start to crack America, that's when it gets exciting.
That's right, baby. Come over to the Yanks, the Yanks
side.
That's
what I want to do. That's right. Get over there. MSG.
To the States. Oh, the East Coast. The East is the beast. That's what's up. So talking about mental health just real quick again, I think it's really important because, you know, you've spoken about your mental health. And it is a very important topic. And just for the listeners of the podcast who might be going through dark times, what can you share from your own experiences to maybe help those people in need?
It gets better. You know, not you've survived every bad day you've had. That's all I can say to someone, because it's never always going to be sunshine and rainbows, but it's going to be hard days in your life, and there's going to be incredible days. Sometimes you just got to ride out them hard days so you can see the finish line. But you need to talk. I'm someone who's openly admitted, because I'm not as ashamed of it, and I'm not embarrassed that I have mental health problems. I'm not embarrassed of it at all. When you talk, it's like a problem shared is a problem halved. If you can unload some of your problems, whether it's to your mum, your friends, my coaches, I tell my coaches all my problems, and it helps so much.
Charlie, he's looking, he says, yep.
Probably he's, a yep. bit too much. It's like, come on, what's wrong with her this week? But it's important to talk. And so if you struggle with mental health problems, it does not make you less of a person. Being able to stand up and talk about it, that is what makes you a better person. And surviving is the greatest thing you can do, and it's the strongest thing you can do. My uncle killed himself, so I know how much it can like really hit home. So if you can survive it and you can become stronger from it, what an amazing thing.
I couldn't agree more, especially when you talk about sharing and talking about some of those issues. You know, I've gone through a lot of stuff myself, and I found that certain points in my life, you share certain things, and it's almost like you are carrying around these like 50-pound sacks on each shoulder, and all of a sudden you can just put them down and you're walking on
it's
air.
It's like an instant relief when you actually, just, it's like the way I describe my anxiety when I have it, and thank the Lord, I haven't had it for quite a long time now. It was like my body, imagine your body's filling up with water and you're drowning, but you can't stop it. And you can feel the water's getting higher and higher and you're slowly drowning, but you can't stop it.
Terrifying.
That is how it used to feel for me day in, day out when it was bad. And I used to have like the worst anxiety attacks, and I would hide it. I wouldn't tell people in the gym. I used to scratch my face a bit quite bad. I got quite a lot of scars on the side of my face because of it, and my right arm for some bizarre reason. I used to scratch my right arm or scratch my face till it bled. That was like a coping mechanism. Or I would lock myself in my house. I'd go to the gym, no one would know anything. Then I'd come home, I'd lock my door, all my curtains would be shut and no one would know. And you'd see me out and then you'd go, you're right, Shan? Yeah, you're right. And I was my bubbly, hey, how you doing? And it was all fake. You'd see me on social media, bubbly, happy. It was fake because social media is fake. And then when the truth comes out, it's like, oh my God, I should have just been real. I should have been honest from the start. So just be yourself. Be honest. If things are hard, talk about it because it will get better.
Try to tell people you can't judge your insides from other people's outsides. You know, you see all these people living this life, and it's not always like that.
No, of course it isn't.
It's not always like that.
You can't look at people's social medias and think that you're not doing well because they're doing amazing. You're seeing a snapshot of someone's life. You might see a couple post a picture of them looking happy on holiday and you think, oh, I wish I had that. What you don't know is they put the phone down, they're arguing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or you might see someone driving a Ferrari and you think, oh, I wish I had that. What you don't know is he's in debt up to his eyeballs. He can't even afford
to fill the tank.
Exactly. That's what it is. Don't be in competition with anyone else. Stay in your own lane and be content and happy with who you are.
100%. Not all that glitters is gold. I'll tell you, I want to ask you just a little bit about how you got over the Rachel Ball defeat, because you've been quoted as saying, you know, it was the best thing that could have happened to you. Mm. I want you to elaborate on that. But, you know, I think it takes a lot for a fighter to come back from something like that, you know, especially because you are well known on social media. Mm. You know, a lot of people do follow you. They know who you are. And then it's, you know, you get beat and then all your haters come out. Oh, they're, you know, this and that and the other. But you came back and here you are fighting for a world title.
Everyone loves you when you're winning. Everyone loves you when you're winning. When you lose, that's when you see who's genuine and who is really there for you. Yeah, it was hard. Like, I'm not going to play it down. I felt like the world had just swallowed me up. I was struggling so bad. My mum and my stepdad Lee took me to the New Forest the week after just to get me away because I couldn't cope. I didn't leave the house, didn't stop crying. I was like...
You were busted up.
I was suicidal, I'm going to be honest. Yeah, I was suicidal. The thoughts that crossed my mind was ridiculous. And people might go, what? It's just a fight. It's just sport. No. Boxing is my life. I feel like it's my identity almost. Well, that's how I felt. I felt like it was all I had. It was my identity. And then I would open my phone and I'd see these horrific messages and I was just like, oh my God, people are glad that I've lost and I couldn't cope. You either lose or you learn, and I learn. And the loss, the knockdown, the after effect, it all humbled me and I needed it. And maybe I wasn't given everything I had in my training camps, but I certainly am now because I'm never going to feel that feeling ever again. You know, I used to train in the day in my gym and then go home at night. I was driving back and forth every day. It's a long drive, over an hour a day. I was spending 3 hours a day in the car, and on a Friday, about 5 hours a day in the car. And then I was meant to do my evening sessions and I'd have sprints, but I was so tired and I wasn't doing it because I didn't have someone there pushing me. So I might have had to do 10 sets of really hard sprints, but I was doing 5 sets of really hard.
Cutting some corners.
The other five are just like medium. And you have to take accountability for that. If you're not, you get found out. If you're not putting it in, you get found out. And I did. And now I stay near the gym. I live in a little hotel.
Travelodge.
Yeah. Big up Travelodge.
Other hotels are available.
Yeah, other hotels are available. But they don't have
including the Holiday Inn Express.
They don't have the view of Sainsbury's car park like I have experienced for 16 weeks, which is horrible. But I'm now in the gym in the evenings. And I've got my team next to me on the treadmill, making sure I hit numbers every session, making sure that I feel like I'm going to puke, that I've emptied the tank, that they can get the best version of me out of myself. And I will do that for the rest of my career now.
It's one thing I love about boxing. You know, you can sit and talk all you want. You can have the team. You can have the trunks with the glitter on them, and the boots with the tassels. You could be kitted out, whatever, whatever. But once you step in that ring, it's the ring of truth. And if you've cut corners, it's going to show.
And let me tell you, that ring, when things aren't going your way, it's a fucking lonely place.
It's a very dark, dark place.
It's a horrible, dark, lonely place. You can have 5 million followers on Instagram. You can have 10 million followers on Twitter. They're not going to fight for you.
Nope.
You can have £10 million in the bank, 2 Ferraris in your drive, and gold boots on your feet. Is that going to help you win a fight? No, it's not. Hard work is going to help you win that fight. Nothing else.
Train hard, fight easy. All right, let's go to the fan questions. I'm going to let you go because I know you have just been, like I said, poked and prodded. Shannon Courtney's done like 1,000 interviews today.
We saved the best for last, though.
That's it. Okay, so the fans want to know. Here we go. Bo Holden asks you, we see from your Instagram you spend a lot of time in hotels for training camp. Oh, here we go. Talk to us about adapting for the mental aspect of being boxed in that small room. Does that help fuel your fire?
Yeah, of course it does, because you sit there and, you know, I'll FaceTime my mum or my sister or my friends and they're all out and they're here or they're sitting there. Like, guaranteed, my sister will be sitting there with a cookie in her hand when I FaceTime her and I'm like, you cow. And it just adds fuel to the fire because you just think, oh, there's a reason why I'm here. Look past them things and, like, you know, you've got to do it. And then you speak to friends and that you're making people proud, and it's just, it's a hard job, but I know that if I put in this hard work and this hard graft and these sacrifices, yeah, I will reap the huge rewards.
That's right.
Like I will do Saturday night.
Jack Whiteman asks you, when Saturday, is Rachel Ball the first defense? That seems to make sense.
Yes.
Okay. Theo the Great asks you, how are you feeling at bantamweight? What differences have you noticed?
I have abs.
There you go.
bantamweight is my true weight. Definitely, I feel much better at it. Even though I'm lighter, I feel like I hit harder. I think Charlie can back me up there. Because I'm sharper, you know, I'm quicker on my feet, I'm not carrying extra weight. You know, I look like a true athlete now because of it. And yeah, I'm much more comfortable at bantamweight. And I make the weight nice as well.
All right. Sean Dent asks you, how is Josh Kelly getting on after the defeat to Avanesian?
Josh is good, you know. Josh is enjoying family life. He's got 2 beautiful children and a beautiful wife, Remy. He's loving being a dad. And good on him, because he had a hard fight. He had a long camp, because his fight kept getting postponed as well. So he's just enjoying, you know, being a dad, being a husband, and being a normal bloke. Don't get me wrong, he's been in the gym, because he's a fighter. He loves the gym.
Do you think we're going to see him back?
Yeah. Listen, Josh is one of the most unbelievable talent says out there. He's got more natural ability in his little toe than I've got in my whole body. It just wasn't his night, and that happens. It's boxing, you know. The greats lose. Josh will be back, and I'm buzzing to see him back.
Have you talked to him about your loss to Rachel and how you dealt with that?
When I actually lost, Josh, he rang me, and his words, they were beautiful words, and he really helped me, actually, some of the great things he said to me. And I was going into my last fight against Norek, I was quite nervous. And me and Josh had a really beautiful chat, actually, because he's a man of the Lord as well. He's religious, same as me. We had a great talk. And he was saying to me, do you know what, Shannon, just when you go in there, forget everything else that's going on. Like, you know, there's more to life than just boxing. Don't you put so much pressure on yourself. And I was like, yeah, you're right. He was like, what you've got to do is you've got to enjoy fight week. And I enjoyed fight week so much last time. And it's played out in my performance. And that's exactly what I'm going to do.
It showed, man. Yeah. It was a great performance. It really was.
Josh Kelly's a great, great guy.
Okay, final question is from Carly Robertson. And she asks Shannon, when international travel opens back up, where are you first hitting up?
Vegas, baby.
Oh, there you go. That's what's up. Okay, cool.
My favorite place in the world. But I think my partner wants a nice chilled out holiday somewhere. Like, we're talking about going to Bali, I think.
Very nice.
So, yeah, Bali. But if Mark allows me to go on a party holiday, then definitely Vegas.
Vegas or Bali. Okay, well, that's a wrap. Shannon, best of luck for Saturday. It's great seeing you. Thank you so much for spending time to talk to me.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Marshall's original opponent, Femke Hermans, unfortunately had to withdraw earlier in the week after her coach contracted COVID. We hope he gets better soon. So that's it for our first episode from the Ben Vargas Fight Week. It's here locked in the bank. And tomorrow we're going to be joined by the Destroyer, Conor Benn, in the main event. And I think we're also going to have Sammy Vargas, Bones Adams, and promoter Lee Baxter. So that should be great. Looking forward to that. And until then, I'm David Diamante, and this is Matchroom Radio.